We're looking forward to having you here Sunday. Glad that the polar vortex has passed around here. It was pretty cold.
We were looking at that. We were in Europe and reading the weather reports, and it looked pretty dire.
Oh, yeah. Well, have you been to Purdue before? Have you played here with a group or collaborated with or is this your first trip here? Do you know?
You know, it's not the first trip, but I think it was over 30 years ago that I played a concert.
Oh, my goodness.
I seem to remember, and I may have played two. One with clarinetist Richard Stoltzman quite a while ago, and another solo. I kind of remember playing the Schumann Fantasy in Purdue, but I don't remember much more.
All right.
So it has been a while, so I'm looking forward.
Yeah, and we have a new piano since then. So
wonderful.
Definitely. Yeah,
wonderful.
That'd be a nice instrument. I mentioned that's, obviously the quality of instruments these days has risen, and it's obviously a Steinway, but certainly the halls make a big difference. How is it, for someone that's, sort of reliant on having a decent instrument in the area, how is that to travel around and do that?
Well, you take your chances. There are people who travel around with their instruments, which used to be the norm with certain Steinway artists. They would go around. My teacher, Rudolf Serkin, went around with his piano and his piano tuner all over the country. That was a long time ago, and that doesn't happen anymore. But you're right. I mean, there are good Steinways everywhere now in the country and, of course, all over Europe. You are a little bit reliant on the instrument. I just came from a European tour, and I was lucky in five different places, some of them quite small. We had excellent pianos and excellent tuners, but you are dependent on that. You're also dependent on the halls and the size of the hall and the acoustics of the hall. So you take your chances.
Oh yeah.
but when you're on stage, you're inside the music and you're thinking about that and you're concentrating on that, and in a way you make music whatever happens. Even if you don't have a piano absolutely to your taste, you're still inside the musical thought and the feeling of the music.
Yeah. We're speaking with Richard Good, who performs Sunday at Low Playhouse for Purdue Convocations. The program has Haydn and his friend Mozart, the wonderful Beethoven, which you're incredibly known for, and some romantic works from Chopin and Janáček. It spans about 200 years of music. I was curious, these days, as one performs Haydn and Mozart, even Beethoven, has the sort of historically informed movement, has that affected your playing and when you pick up Mozart or when you pick up Beethoven even?
Well, it enters your ear. You can't help, for example, thinking about the sounds that are made now, say chamber orchestra who are playing with less vibrato or more controlled vibrato. Some of those things do certainly stick with you. And I think also the clarity of sound of the old instruments, the old keyboard instruments, is something that you learn from, and also the balance of sound, because the modern piano, for example, one of the differences is that the modern piano has a very heavy bass. And so perhaps what was instinctive before now becomes something that's also borne out by historical instruments, that the balance of registers is quite different. So I think all that does have an effect. I'm not sure it has such a profound effect on your understanding of the inner meaning of the music. I'm not sure I could say that has changed a great deal over the last years, for me anyway, with historical performances and listening to historical instruments.
Sure.
But we're not necessarily all conscious of what happens to us with fashions in playing. No, I think there are ways in which you change even unconsciously because of what you hear over the course of your life.
And it's always, to me, a little bit of a, fantasy. We don't really know what it sounded like in Bach's time. We can imagine, and certainly a staccato note in Mozart or Bach is maybe very different from a staccato note in Beethoven.
Yeah, and also, if we heard it now, it would be a different note because we're hearing it with our different ears. You know, it'd be somebody once made a quite profound comment. It was at a Mozart convocation of Mozart experts, and they had all talked about how Mozart played and historical instruments and how it sounded in his day. And somebody said, suppose we had a record by some miracle of Mozart playing one of his concerti, and we actually heard it as it was done then. Would we then, all of us, go home and try to reproduce it? And would that be the end of Mozart performance? Would we all be trying to reproduce that one? No, of course not. We would be playing Mozart, and we would be playing him according to our lights, with this in mind, perhaps, but it wouldn't absolutely change. And that's, I think, the marvelous thing about this music, is that it's something which has manifold kind of possibilities and interpretations, and it means more than one interpretation or one sound, and that's one of the reasons why we're listening to it, you know, 200 and 300 years later.
Absolutely. I know that an orchestra might say, oh, gosh, Richard, we'd love for you to play some Brahms this season. And, you know, when you collaborate with a singer, they may say, oh, you know, I'm looking at this song cycle. This is a solo recital, so obviously you have carte blanche, I imagine, in putting these pieces together and love all mm-hmm. these pieces. And an mm-hmm. idea of choosing any of the Beethoven sonatas, is this one that's a particular favorite, de Léa Dieu?
It is. Yes, it is. It is, actually. I mean, I could have chosen others, but this particular one is the only Beethoven sonata. It's the Lebowohl sonata, the so-called Les Adieux. I think it's, besides being a marvelous piece in its own right, it's the only Beethoven sonata that has a real program, because this was written on the departure of his friend and student Archduke Rudolf from Vienna. Napoleon was bombarding Vienna. The Archduke had to leave, and Beethoven wrote this as a commemoration of his return. And actually, it follows in a beautiful way the program of his leaving the side, leaving the post horns, announcing the departure, the mixed feelings about the journey. The second movement is the absence and the friend's sadness and anxiety, and then the rapturous return in the last movement. And all this is very beautifully reflected in the music and the musical relations. I don't think there's anything quite like it. We have sonatas with names like Pastoral and, of course, Pachinat and so forth. But this is the only one, I think, which has a descriptive feeling about it. And it's quite wonderful how Beethoven followed out this emotional program. So that is a very special piece for me. And I wanted to put Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven together in the first half, but very, very different kinds of pieces, where the Haydn is maybe one of the most ambitious pieces he wrote for piano, and with a most surprising ending, which I think is unique with Haydn. And the Mozart are some short pieces, which I kind of put together as a sort of suite, of pieces that are, again, not terribly much known. The first one is a march, which is transcribed from an orchestral version, and then some pieces that he wrote as part of a suite in the style of Bach, actually, and then two beautiful and strange chromatic pieces that he wrote rather late, a minuet and a gigue. So I just wanted to put these three masters together in sort of different configuration.
Yeah, well, they're delightful, and we're looking forward to it. Chopin is maybe the poet. You know, if we think about Beethoven being so dramatic and Liszt being so virtuosic, I think Chopin is sort of a great marriage between the two, because it's sweet, sentimental, and to me, such poetry.
Yeah, I would say Chopin is a very special case in every way, because he was. We think of him as romantic, and of course, one can say that it's true. He was of that period, and of course, music is highly emotional and so forth. But he was also, you know, his favorite composers were Bach and Mozart. And one feels that in his music. I often like to play, not in this program, but I like to play Bach and Chopin together, because he learned so much from Bach, and he was so indebted to his study of Bach and the Well-Tempered Clavier, which he used to practice before public recitals. And one of the things that gives his music its great power and strength, really, is this classical background, both of Bach counterpoint and of his love of clear-cut forms. You know, he was not just a rhapsode, you know. He was not just somebody expressing himself at the piano in lovely ways, but he was a powerful maker of music in terms of form. And I think that's why one of the reasons his music has such enormous appeal in every way. But in a way, in the second half of the program, I preface the Chopin with a composer who was, I think, in many ways more of a romantic even than Chopin, and whose music doesn't have this great emphasis on form, than Janáček. Oh, and I think these four pieces called In the Mist are kind of expressionistic masterpieces. Very, very emotional, very eruptive, surprising in the way they work out, quite fascinating. And I think very much Janáček was devoted to sudden change in his music, surprising juxtapositions and outbreaks of passion coming at the least likely moments. I think when we hear that kind of expression, it is really not like anything else. He was also very much involved with the language, and would go around walking in the city or in the countryside, notating people's speech patterns. And that enters into his music too, this idea of music that almost reproduces the level of spoken words, the pitch levels of voices when they're speaking or shouting and so forth. So there's a fascination about this composer. I think, in a way, I think Janáček is only now receiving his due as a great composer, of opera, for example.
Lots of layers to Janáček and to this recital with Richard Good that's happening Sunday afternoon at 3:00. We're looking forward. I guess I'd end asking, what's on the horizon? Have you thought about more recordings? Is that something that's, recordings changed so much over the last 20, 30 years. Is that something that you are looking forward
well,
to at all?
Nothing that I have planned, actually. But I'm thinking about it, but there's no definite plan. The last recording I made a few years ago was Beethoven Piano Concerti. But it's in my mind, but nothing definite has emerged.
Well, as a music lover and a broadcaster, we're dying for more, but we'll certainly love hearing you live here at Purdue.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm looking forward.